The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Thank you very much, Ben. 0874 100 102 gives you the last word by text or by WhatsApp. We're going to start with one of the most remarkable stories I think I can remember covering on this programme in over 20 years. The very idea of it, of exploding pagers, killing at least 12 people, including two children, and wounding 3,000 people almost simultaneously. We're joined from Beirut in Lebanon by Hannah McCarthy. I suspect, Hannah, many people are aware of this story because it is so extraordinary. It's been discussed. But for those who may be catching up, just tell us a little bit about what happened yesterday afternoon, please.
Sure. So around 3:30 yesterday, several hundred Hezbollah members, you know, they had different roles within Hezbollah. They had pagers that had been given to them in recent months, and they started ringing. And after a few rings, they exploded. So there was kind of early reports yesterday, and it wasn't kind of clear the scale of this. So when I was in Beirut, we were hearing, you know, there was a dozen Hezbollah members who were injured in South Beirut. But as the day progressed, the scale of the attack became apparent. We saw reports across Lebanon, in cities in southern Lebanon, in the Bekaa Valley, and also in Syria and Iran, that, you know, these pagers had detonated. And again, the initial reports, it wasn't quite clear how badly damaged people were or injured they were. But as the day went on, we saw quite serious injuries, people with eye injuries, people with injuries to their stomach, to their legs, basically places where they might have been holding a pager. And we also saw the death toll rise. And as of today, it stands at 12, including two children.
OK, just explain for people who Hezbollah are, please.
So Hezbollah today are quite an expansive organization. They have a militant wing that people are probably quite familiar with from the news. This is the wing that's full of fighters and intelligence operatives who are currently engaged in basically a war with Israel along the southern border between Lebanon and Israel. Hezbollah also has a kind of wider presence in the region. You know, it's involved in Syria. It kind of works alongside some militias in Iraq as well. But in Lebanon, it also has a political wing. It also has members who are parliamentary members. It's part of the government in effect. And it also has what I would kind of describe as a kind of civil wing. So in communities that are Hezbollah strongholds, it provides, you know, medical services. It runs hospitals. It has its own ambulance services. So some of the people who had these pagers, they weren't just from the militant wing. We also understand that they were, for example, medics. And we understand that about 4 healthcare workers are among those that were killed.
Why were they carrying pagers? A pager seems like 20th century technology, when presumably mobile phones are freely available around Lebanon and beyond.
Sure. So even before the war began, you know, there had been a certain element within Hezbollah who had used pagers to avoid surveillance by Israel. People might be familiar with some of the stories behind Israeli surveillance. You know, there was a story that broke earlier in the year about them surveilling the International Criminal Court in The Hague, the Pegasus software. So all of these kind of stories, I think, created a lot of concerns among Hezbollah about how secure their communication methods were if they were using phones. And as the number of targeted assassinations inside Lebanon of Hezbollah members increased since the war last October began, a kind of paranoia took over. So Hezbollah actually introduced a rule that, you know, any fighter found with a phone on the battlefield would be, you know, expelled from the group. That's how kind of serious they were taking it. And obviously they need some sort of communication method. So they had reverted to pagers, which they viewed as a lower tech, but ultimately safer option for them to use and to coordinate, you know, and warn each other, for example, about, you know, possible Israeli drones, possible Israeli strikes, and when there's Israeli aircraft overhead.
So why would a pager explode? Had bombs been placed in all of these, or explosive devices been placed in all of these devices? Or was there something about the devices themselves which would make them vulnerable on a certain signal to exploding? What was it?
Sure. So after the kind of chaos of yesterday, I think a lot of the focus today has been on how exactly did this happen? So there was obviously a lot of debate online in the chaos of yesterday, but I think we're getting a clearer picture now that basically we presume at this point Israel, I mean, it's basically, it hasn't been publicly recognized as an attack carried out by Israel, but CNN has reported from its sources that unofficially, Israel has confirmed that it carried out this attack. But it looks like Israel found some way to breach the supply chain for these pagers before they were brought into Lebanon. And it looks like a tiny explosive device was placed in a batch of these pagers with a very small switch that could be triggered remotely to detonate the explosive. So it's a very, very sophisticated operation. It would have taken months of planning. And again, there was initial reports that these devices have been purchased from a Taiwanese company, but now it looks like that they were Taiwanese branded pagers that were actually manufactured in Hungary. So it'll be interesting as we see more of the paper trail of that as that comes out, you know, what company was able to export them or buy them, you know, how did this work and how did they end up, you know, in the hands of Hezbollah members in Lebanon.
There's certainly an evil, twisted genius at work in relation to the idea and its execution. But if, as seems almost certain, Israel was responsible, given that it has a history of using phones previously as devices to explode or to track what they regard as enemies, to have strikes against them, in those circumstances, now what is likely to be the retaliation of Hezbollah?
It's not clear yet, and it's not even fully clear what the strategic motive behind this attack was. Experts have broadly described this as, you know, tactically impressive, but strategically unclear. And it seems like Israel carried out this attack at this point primarily because it feared that the presence of the explosive devices was going to be detected by Hezbollah, and therefore their ability to carry out an attack like this would be foiled. So again, given that there doesn't seem to be a clear strategic motive for that now, it obviously will. It obviously has sown kind of, you know, paranoia and chaos within Hezbollah. It's affected their ability to communicate within each other, to each other, and also will mean that there's going to be a lot of time spent reviewing other equipment. Are there other breaches that they need to be watchful of? So, I mean, Hezbollah are certainly more vulnerable now, but it doesn't seem like there's a major change in how either party views each other or the prospect of a negotiated deal around the border area, which again is something that the US has been pushing as recently as Monday.
Now, this is something we've recorded before we came on air because we were afraid of the phone line dropping live on air, and we've had a little bit of interference. But there's also been reports in the last few moments of further explosions, further detonations in Beirut and Beka and elsewhere in Lebanon, all in the around 3 o'clock, more two-way radios and more pagers, and of reports of multiple cars being alight, apartments on fire, more injuries, and hospitals filling up again. Now, I don't have confirmation of those reports at the time we're speaking, but presumably there must be quite a degree of fear in Beirut and beyond that more of this might be coming.
Sure, I have confirmation from one kind of Reuters journalist who said that they had seen a device blowing up in Beirut. So it certainly seems that there has been a second wave of detonations. So this, and I mean, if we can remember when the senior Hezbollah commander was assassinated at the end of July in southern Beirut, that was seen as, you know, a major attack. But then, you know, only days later, Ismail Haniyeh in Iran was assassinated. So I think people are fearful that this could be, you know, a two-strand attack. Or is it, you know, a second wave that didn't fully detonate yesterday? So again, it's unclear, and it's definitely an unfolding story. And apart from saying that there has been some reports confirmed by Reuters, I'm not sure I can comment more on the specifics.
Yeah, I suspect. I suspect anyone with an unexploded pager is quickly getting rid of it, if at all possible, but how you dispose of it safely to make sure that innocent people don't pick one up and get hurt as well is another issue. What is the view in Beirut before this in relation to what's been going on in Gaza and the possibility of Israel extending its offensive beyond Gaza to other places? What will this do now, do you think, for the mood in Lebanon and beyond in relation to fighting a war with Israel?
In general, the mood in Lebanon is that people do not want a full-scale war with Israel. The country is going through an economic crisis. Those displaced from their homes in southern Lebanon have very few resources. They're not being given state support, like, for example, the communities displaced in northern Israel. The summer season has been lost largely. Which is very important. Tourism is very important. And the healthcare system is extremely fragile and has just had to cope with a mass casualty event. So I think the appetite for something like a full-scale war is pretty low in Lebanon. And I think there's concerns within Hezbollah as well that if they drag the country into a full-scale war, that they will lose a lot of the support within the country. They obviously have a strong amount of support from the Lebanese Shia community that they draw most of their members from. But even then, the Shias have been bearing the brunt of the war. Many of them have been displaced from their homes in southern Lebanon. So there will be people calling for a strong retaliation, but there also will be people who just don't want another day like this, who don't want, another attack where they fear going to the supermarket or they're watching, people with their hands suddenly blowing off while riding a motorbike.
Jesus, terrible stuff. Hannah McCarthy, thank you very much for joining us from Beirut.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper, weekdays from 4:30. Today.